Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're going to learn today.
Innovate like a startup. Deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's going to be a great day.
I know you're going to dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Aero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 132. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Aero, and joining me from Prague is Mr. John Nicholson.
John, welcome to Prague, my friend.
Thank you, Pete. It's, I went all the way to the observation tower and remembered, oh no, I have a podcast. So it's like running down a hill on cobblestone and flip-flops. That has been the past like 25 minutes for me. So
there's no video of this? Oh my goodness. It's nice to see you. We're having a podcast. We usually do it on a Zoom call. So it's nice to actually see you in person. This will be fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Too bad we couldn't get our guest to come to Prague for this one as well to join us. So we'll bring him in on the Zoom call. Coming in from Zoom all the way from the UK is Matt North. And Matt, welcome to the podcast.
Good afternoon, guys. Nice to be on this. Yeah. Likewise, bit sad I couldn't come to Prague to join you there. Very beautiful city.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, yeah. We're here for the Veeam Vanguard Summit. We're going to have some fun talking with one of our good partners, Veeam, and see what's going on in the data protection and always-on availability space.
Yep, yep.
But that's not what we're talking about today. Today, we want to talk about design and sizing for HCI. Now, I think all of us on this call have done some form of sizing, whether it was for traditional infrastructure and even for HCI. And I think the rules have changed. I think we've all made our fair of sizing mistakes. And I thought that might make for a pretty good conversation. What do you think, John?
Yeah, no, this is something that's definitely evolved over the years. I mean, think back to the Stone Ages where it was always, you know, one-to-one resource allocation. You know, you go back. I mean, Pete, when did you start with vSphere? I was around 3.5. Were you earlier? Or?
No, I was later. I was in the fours.
Oh, okay. In the fours. So this is where, you know, my virtualization gray beard from, you know, all of 7 years ago.
But. Yeah.
You guys are youngsters. I was around 2.0 trying to put it into data centers in the US for HP. That was fun.
Well, it's definitely changed because you remember back in the day, it was overcommitment of CPU was very scary. I mean, there was some overhead, but also like memory. Back then, you didn't really overcommit it much, did you?
Not at all, no. You had memory and CPU you stayed in line with. The big ones back then were, yeah, cap in hand to a storage administrator for a lot of storage up front for a single box, and then also cramming in as many network cards as possible into some of those servers.
Well, yeah, back with 1 gig, it was, I called it the Hydra server because it's like, okay, I got 2 for vMotion, 2 for iSCSI, yep. 2 for management, 2 for VM, maybe 4 for VM. Like it was this, you had this, yeah, this multi-headed Hydra of cables coming out. So if you're using 1U pizza boxes, it's like, okay, I've got 10 cables coming out of this. Like it was messy behind the server.
Well, the initial sizing issues, I think the lessons learned started out that everything got thrown on one box, right? All the workloads on these servers, and all of a sudden, not enough memory, not enough storage. And then, but I think that transitioned into now we need to have all the storage, all the networking, all the processors.
And I think one of the other challenges early with sizing is depending on which tribe you came from. So if you came from the networking tribe, you're like, okay, let's get in early on 10 gig. Or if you came from, you know, the compute had been the bottleneck that you'd experienced previously, and that was where your scars were, you'd end up with like a quad socket, you know, 16 cores, and there would also be 16 gig of RAM in this box. So there was a lot of misconceptions to where people's sizing was, they would obsess over one area, and then they would often undersize horribly the storage or networking or memory, you know, whichever area wasn't their focus.
Yeah, and price always had a choice in that, as you say. You know, if you went heavy on the CPU, RAM suffered. There wasn't that, I'd say, even balance, which potentially that's what HCI brought into sizing, was you had to look at more of the different options for your box. You weren't just focusing just on compute memory. It was looking at the networking, looking at the storage, and trying to get the balance right, really.
Well, and what I've seen people find is when they would move to HCI and they would get that, they'd have a much more harmonious blend, I guess, of resources. Mm. They would often find that they were horribly missized on the earlier. So part of that transition is you've got to figure out, okay, what is approximately my ratio of CPU to memory to storage and IO and things like that? You often find that a lot of people don't actually know what their current bottleneck is. So you got to figure out which tools you're going to use to do that.
So Matt, I know we have the design and sizing guide on the on Storage Hub. I know a lot of folks look to that when they're looking at planning their HCI solutions. But what do you see are some of the more common mistakes that people make when they go into sizing an HCI solution?
I think the first thing is it's finding out what you've actually got. So don't look at a product, don't look at a ReadyNode specs or an appliance specs and think, what can I run on that? I think the early days of HCI, especially some vendors, and hands up here, I was at one, you had a model and it could do X. So people tried to fit everything on 2X. I think still that assessment phase is still pretty key. So what have I actually got? What's going to move across and will it move across as is? That's what I saw in the early days of HCI was always missing. People would, you know, get a product and say, great, can I do this? Instead of saying, well, what have I got and what am I going to need? You know, buying a 5-seater car when you've got 6 kids isn't going to work just because that car looked great and it's what I need to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that focus on reverse sizing of I'm gonna use these buckets and then figure out what I can throw into it.
Yeah,
is nowhere near as great as figuring out what your actual workload is and then finding the optimal bucket size, so to speak. Forward sizing rather than reverse sizing.
Yeah, and a lot of that, it's new, you know, new technologies. Get blamed when something goes wrong, even if it's not their fault. So I think people were very skeptical at first of this new technology. You know, you didn't need the storage guy to size it. Realistically, with HCI, because it's just compute, and especially I would say some software-based solutions, because people were just downloading the software and putting it on and trying it out, that resulted in a way of, well, what can your box do? And it's like, no, what have you got? What do you need me to run? And we'll size to that. But I spent a lot of time in the early years saying what our product could do. And yeah, I just felt that was the wrong way around in the early days. I definitely flip back the other way now. People are assessing the workloads a lot more. What can go on? What do we need? Do we need to split out, you know, different clusters, etc.? That's definitely appearing a lot more now, thankfully.
So what are some of the tools that you're seeing as people are using for collecting? What are they doing today? Like getting your head around? Because you're right. If you go up to a typical, this is a common challenge. People go up and, you know, some sales engineer shows up and says, well, what capacity do you need? And people just go 1,000 and like don't quantify 1,000 terabytes, 1,000. I think back to that Onion video that everyone should go watch about HP cloud thing. And they're like, what's the capacity of the cloud? 1,000. But that's how I feel people are. And if you get put on the spot and if you inherently, I discovered this because when people would ask me and then I would go look at what I'm actually using and I'm not even within an order of magnitude versus what's measured. So what are people using to measure?
I think, the measurement is key. I always break it down into 3 phases when I talk about it. It's doing that assessment first, then sizing, and then there's an output. So it's, you know, what is your as is? What can we change and get your 2B? So if you've been around VMware, I still think one of the most popular tools is a person's spreadsheet. Someone somewhere will have a spreadsheet about everything they have. You can have automated tools. I think we've all seen it. Seen it inside companies I've worked at with. Everyone still goes back to it. But I've got a spreadsheet. That's the root of truth.
Yeah.
But RV Tools is very good as a inventory collection. So, you know, if we divide up maybe the assessment into what have I got, what are the specs, RAM, virtual CPUs, etc. RV Tools is very good there. There's some other ones out there. You've then got VMware products which can potentially be used like Network Insight, VROPS, again, collection. Live Optics has become quite a good independent tool for people to use. And I think the advantage of Live Optics is you can leave it running and it actually gets you performance data. Whereas RV Tools obviously is just a snapshot. It doesn't tell you how things are performing and going. And
yeah, it's just a capture.
Yeah. Well, it might get you CPU utilization exactly the moment you run it. But the thing is, if you've stared at enough Live Optics, which was my former life, was I felt like I became like the Live Optics whisperer. I'm like, you have a web server. It's always at 100%. It's been hacked and is mining Butcoin. Like you start reading into it and you're like, your backups kick off at 10 o'clock at night. Because I see a large read throughput spike on all your hosts then. And this is the backup target because it's got a random write IO pattern at the same time. And your Exchange server, I see defrag kicks off at 1 a.m. because there's this process. Like you spend enough time in these tools. But what's interesting about learning to use these tools is you can use them not only for sizing, but to make sense of the chaos that's going on in your data center.
Correct, Ryan. And that's typically when you start an assess phase. So if you're looking at, like the industry calls it, assessment-led selling now, finding out what they're running and then using these tools to dig a bit deeper, as you say, maybe not at your level of whispering and just looking at it, humming and going, here you go. Mortals like us need a bit more work.
Pete, the fan on that laptop is spinning a little high. Are you running a render chat? No, it's...
It gets you in the next level of conversation with them as well, which is then not just finding out what they're running and how it's running, but understanding it a bit more, which should be there, conscious that not everyone has that time to invest in that. So, you know, RV Tools is a great first pass to say, hey, here's what it might look like. You know, getting that initial proposal out in front of the customer, which could help them justify to go forward with an HCI project in future, because they don't want to spend too much time on it, but they need to have enough data to make a decision.
Well, and one thing I'll encourage anyone out there who's on the partner or the consulting space, where I think a lot of people found value, is, again, going back to my, you know, Live Optics whispering, is you might discover that, okay, backups are kicking off on this Oracle server, but there's a lot of data flooring. You're doing fulls every single day. There may be opportunities to optimize some of the processes to make what is required in the end state lower. So if you discover that, hey, there's this file server that's 40 terabytes or 40 petabytes of, you know, maybe there's all this junk out there, let's have a conversation. Maybe we use a file level tool and see, okay, is there a Disney movie on here? Are there adult videos that need to be deleted? Like, what is that? What is this mystery VM that's the one out? Dig into those outliers and help take that assessment, you know, one step deeper than you normally would go. And you'll often find you can optimize the cost quite a bit.
Yeah, and that's what a good tool gives you, though, right? You do that first pass, get something out to them. Then you dig a bit deeper, second, and you see this proposal evolve over time based on whether it's workloads, costs, politics, whatever is driving it that way. But I think you need a process and a tool set that can help you get through to that.
I love that you brought up politics, because this reminds me of the negotiation with the DBA terrorists, where they're like, I must have 16 cores and I must have 96 gig of RAM. And I'm like, five little old ladies drive that database on Sunday. Like, it has no IO. And it's sometimes you can sit down with them and do a show back at the same time you're doing these assessments and say, look, you have hilariously over-provisioned this. Can we claw back resources? And then they say, well, our enterprise, whatever, won't support it. Or we have some terrorists who are holding those resources hostage and we have to provision them. But at least that way, when someone's making that purchasing decision, they can say, okay, I'm having to add $20,000 to this bomb because, you know, some app team is holding RAM hostage, and they at least, you've done your diligence. So at least if someone wants to complain about the price, they can realize, okay, do I want to fight that political battle? Do I not?
Yeah. So what about tools like the HCI assessment tool? Like, what does that actually assess? I know you want to check out, it's important to see, you know, IOPS, right? You want to, so you can assess and see what the throughput is, but it's more than just assessing IOPS, correct?
We look at the entire environment, back to kind of like what John and Pete, you were saying, and myself earlier, it's not just compute and RAM. We are looking at everything, the IOPS, the latency. You can drill down into certain clusters, which VMs are on, which VMs are off, you know. And the nice thing is you can break out the cluster, separate it out, and run different sizing models through it. And then we have integration with the vSAN ReadyNode sizer from Live Optics. So you can export the model straight into the sizing tool for that next phase.
So one thing that, like, we talk about IOPS from a sizing perspective, one thing I really like that it captures is it can actually see block size, because a 4K read is not the same as a 64K read.
Very true.
You'll get, you know... You suddenly get eight times better IOPS when you shrink the block size to this magic 4K that is not necessarily as common. And so having a tool that can normalize the IOPS and understand that, okay, writes are obviously harder. We have to mirror, we have to erasure code those. There's additional amplification factors. And this is stuff that I've talked to people with, you know, traditional storage sizing. They would sometimes normalize it all to 4K, and that really they did 16K, and suddenly they have a quarter of the performance they expected. But having a tool that basically helps deal with all that offset for you and understand the block size, so you don't have to manually.
Yeah.
And in reality, I mean, we can talk to Keeler and he'll go into like the deep dive of how really it's not one or the, when you see the average, it's a mix of giant blocks and then a bunch of tiny ones. And this is all this deep dive that no one wants to learn. So it's great we have tools to help offload this.
Yeah. And no one should be learning to that level now. You know,
marketing show.
Pete and his pretty PowerPoints, but you know, as HCI removed a lot of operations for people, the tools should as well, right? The tools need to keep up. You can't give someone an easier platform to manage and operate if it's really hard and complicated to size to get onto it. That just makes no sense.
Well, and you're adding, I mean, this has been I think sometimes unfair critique, but with HCI, you're adding the storage at the same time you're sizing for compute. So you're adding one more dimension. Now, in reality, you probably should have been trying to holistically size this stuff anyways. And when you viewed storage as this endless bottomless bucket, what that manager storage team was hilariously overpurchasing and provisioning so that, oh yeah, LUNs just magically appear for years with no effort. Well, that meant someone overbought and bought 3 years of capacity up front, which was not very cost effective. So there's advantages to adding this extra dimension to your sizing.
Yeah, it is more this pay-as-you-go type model now that you can get to. And the way you can scale HCI in general, I think, means people aren't saying, well, what do I need for the next 3 years? And I think, you know, hand on heart, if you ask me for a 3-year prediction of tech needs at a company, I'd, you know, be loath to do that.
The dartboard is more accurate. You know,
the industry is moving way too quickly now. New technology is coming out. If you think of when HCI started, you know, SSDs becoming a lot cheaper and virtualization being everywhere was really a key catalyst for HCI in general. And yeah, it started off on VDI because VDI used to kill some SANs back in the day when you loaded up 20,000 desktops. You know, so it was a great workload to remove off the SAN and prove the tech worked. But it is now, you know, a lot easier for people to do it as we go sizing through with HCI. So you don't have to order, oh, I need 20 petabytes in 3 years. Well, what do you need now? Building a little bit of overhead, knowing again, through a sizing tool, adding some workloads into it, you can show how the person can scale up from there.
And so, I remember back in 2014, you know, we were buying flash at $2.50 a gig. And then, you know, just a couple of years later, capacity was dropping below a dollar and down to 50 cents. It's being able to leverage that commodity curve as you buy as you go.
Yeah.
It's pretty valuable.
So what other information do you get other than just the amount of IOPS from some of these HCI assessment tools?
In terms of what you're measuring from the as is?
Yeah, like if I run this tool, you know, how is this going to help me, you know, size my environment?
So I think John mentioned it gives you an idea of CPU and RAM usage. And not just the configuration, how much has been, you know, given out to your virtual machines, but what the actual usage is. You can tweak all of these things though, right? So the sizing tool today is set for worst case scenario. I think earlier we mentioned about undersizing. It's a default. You can change defaults, but be aware what that does, right? So that's a decision the team made. I'll be the first to put my hand up. It was not done with the agreement of everyone inside the company, I think, because everyone sizes differently. But undersizing causes a lot of problems further down the chain when you get into GSS, support calls, customer satisfaction. So if you can size knowing, right, we're going to size with 100% usage for CPU up front, that's your worst case scenario.
Right.
Understanding you'll have peaks and troughs throughout the day, which Live Optics can give you a bit of visibility into that the longer you run it. And then it is, looking at, do you have enough disk groups, you know, the cache tier to suffice for the performance, then balancing out with the capacity as well pushing out. So as with all things, you can change as many as you want now in the tool. I think it's really developed over the last year. As we see, this has become, it's not just a sizing tool. I made this point to Mr. Caswell about it, saying, you know, sizing's just one thing that it does, but it has this knock-on effect of customer satisfaction, fewer support calls. If we can size something correctly up front and the customer knows what they're getting, it helps set the expectations. And also collecting that data, you know, GSS can potentially see, okay, what was this cluster sized for, right? So customer might have asked for 500 desktops, all of a sudden, and he starts putting Exchange servers on that, gives you that reference point to have a sensible conversation with them. It's like, hey, you sent us Live Optics data for 500 desktops. We sized it for this. Now you're throwing a whole different workload at it. We need to have a chat about this.
Well, and I dug through some of the advanced settings. And so, you know, there's obviously, it's nice that some are more surface, more apparently, like doing it, adding N plus one or, you know, adding that. But if you want to change, like there's some assumptions about clock speed of the CPUs and cores you use, but you can go change that under the cluster advanced, the amount of drive bays. It'll dynamically assess the number of disk groups, but if for whatever reason you had a form factor that was going to limit you, you can tune those. So that, The other fun thing is I like that it shows the maths. In fact, I'll say maths since we're in this part of the world and y'all.
Thank you very much. That is very kind.
But it's,
I'm sure your boss Ken won't agree, but I have that argument with him for 12 years already. So,
you know, I used to be an English teacher and I actually used British curriculum and I had to say maths and it hurt me deeply every time. But it is kind of cool though, because I'm the maintainer of the VCN Design and Sizing Guide on Storage Hub, and I actually recently deprecated a section where we had these examples of all of the math of end-to-end sizing and dealing with the changes of that, because it's obviously changed quite a bit. I was looking to update and I was like, wait, why am I doing this? The sizer, if you go click, there actually is a log that will go through and say, okay, were we bound by compute? Were we bound by failover capacity? Were we bound by storage? Were we bound? And based on the data inputs, it will tell you what the limit was and show all the algebra, you know, out. And that is now the authoritative source to go look at for figuring out why VCN overhead is what it is or why the sizing will be that. So I encourage everyone who's doing this, if you want to understand why it told you you needed 10 servers when you think you might need 8, go look in there and figure out what the bottleneck is.
It sounds like the design and sizing guide needs to just be a link to the HCI assessment tool.
That actually is the first section, I think, at this point. So, but it's definitely...
We're getting there.
Well, it used to be this thing. We had to train all the SEs. We had to train everyone. Okay, here's all the math, and here's this, and here's the Slack, and you need to do this, and snap overheads, and oh, the file system has this, you know, 2%, you know, whatever all these things are.
Yeah.
And now it's like, okay, just use the sizer. And if you have questions, ask the sizer. It will tell you why it did what it did. So, which is much better than, I guess, black box sizing.
Yeah. Very nice. So, Matt, the HCI assessment tool has been out for a little while. Have there been any changes to it recently?
Yeah, I think the big one John kind of alluded to, how you can now change the CPU, IOPS capacity and memory within the tool, little pluses and minuses.
Yeah.
Beforehand, you used to have to choose the cluster settings up front, which if you've been sizing for VMware environments for a while, I don't think that was a big problem, because compute still compute, right? Whether you're running, you know, a VM is not going to run any differently from a compute aspect if you're running on a SAN or HCI. If it needs those CPUs to run, it needs to run. But having to go back and change it, and then we lost some settings. So implementing the projects feature in beta, so you can save a project, start it, go through, go back, clone it, edit it, share it. And also at the same time, then start with a cluster, so let's say with N+0, see how it affects. I've just done one quickly now, you know, CPU's at 95%, and I can just go right and add some cores. And then if I look at my per node config, that's just going up, say, from 12 to 14 cores per node. So I can see the effect live on the screen, what changing certain configuration options give me. And I think that was a big step forward for us.
Oh, yeah.
You know, being open and honest here, we were caused a bit of this ourselves, right? Because vSAN has a very large HCL. We support a lot of different platforms and a lot of different configuration options.
Sure, yeah.
And it's getting that information from those OEMs into the tool, like John mentioned, you know, how many drive slots, what type of drives, what configurations and options that we can do. You know, it's not just, you know, 10 or 12 appliances just loaded up in here that are a fixed size. We have all these different options. So it was finding out a way, A, get them loaded in correctly in a way that we can then search in a standard format across the different vendors, because we have to do it agnostic first before you go down and choose an OEM. You know, we're looking at changing that as well. So you might be able to choose an OEM platform first, and that will limit the options that we have to measure and size against. But I think projects with the dynamic configuration options now has made it a lot more useful tool, especially helping with assessment-led selling. So again, I can now sit down with a customer on the screen and go through different options and try out different configuration options with them to see how it affects price, sizing, number of nodes, which obviously has an impact on vSAN licensing. So it's a lot more collaborative effort now with the tool, rather than you send me some info, I send you an output back. I could now sit on a Zoom conference with him and go through it with him, and we can come out with different options for him.
That's much better than the classic, just throw a quote at the wall. And
yeah.
It's like, okay, where did this come from? Like, why are you quoting me more for storage than the rest of my data center costs? Like,
yeah.
Where was the wrong assessment or the wrong outlet, you know, understanding?
And it also gives you that paper trail, right? The not protecting you when it comes to something, but if I produce something that's sized based on data, and once it's handed over to sales, have a fair level of confidence that that's not going to get changed for budget or price, I've always got something to come back to. And that is where internally we're looking at making some of this information available to support to help them. As I mentioned, so support can see what was sized, why it was sized, and that gives them a bigger, more rounded picture of a customer environment as well. So again, yes, it's sizing to get an output, but we're looking at how this can help other teams inside VMware.
Well, and particularly, like, I know at Live Optics, you can run that in continuous operation mode, so you can actually follow the history of when the, you know, as the environment expanded, or Viralize Operations can do that too. These tools that can do continuous performance monitoring, they can, you can also see when the new workloads came in, and particularly as more and more people start looking at OpEx models, so you're looking at, say, VMC, or you're looking at one of the VCPP partners, like, you know, doing hosting, then you can align your ongoing growth of your environment with your, okay, why is my OpEx bill going up? Oh, I'm adding all these extra databases, or what those workloads are. Because that's something, is as people try to wrap their heads around an Elastic bill, which I know is kind of scaring, you know, on one hand, but understanding what elastically caused that bill to go up is helpful too.
I like it. I like it. Well, hey, for those of you that don't have a John Nicholson Live Optics Whisperer at your hands, you might want to try the HCI assessment tool.
Pete, based on that hiss on the audio, I think the... Yeah. The battery is dying on your... No, I'm kidding.
You better be kidding. I don't hear a hiss. Just kidding. Cool. All right. Hey, Matt, this is a pretty good introduction into design and sizing for HCI. I want to thank you for coming on. You think there's anything else we need to be covering before we take off, John?
I'm trying to think of a joke, but I'm drawing a blank here. So,
no jokes in Prague. Geez, with all that lovely Staropram and beer.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I'm already two in for the day, so don't worry.
The real Budweiser.
I'm sweating it out as I ran over here, so it's
before 12 o'clock somewhere, so just yeah, say you're in that time zone.
It's beer 30 anywhere, right?
Yeah.
Good stuff. Matt, John, anything else before we land this plane?
No, thank you very much, guys. Shameless plug, there is a sizing session showing the tool at VMworld Europe in Barcelona, where I believe you fine gentlemen will be. Myself, Paul Hargreaves, going through it, we'll be doing the tool, hopefully showing a demo of the new beta mobile app for the tool that we're looking at coming out with.
Oh, nice.
So that's a bit like the reverse sizing. And again, it's about keeping the conversation going. Here's what I've got. Put the configuration of the nodes you've got or thinking about into the box, into the app, and then getting a, what could that run?
Does that beta have a soundbite of John whispering the results to you after you run the sizer?
I'm sure we can do something like a John Nicholson in The Shining or something.
The block size of your WAN traffic indicates data exfiltration by North Korean
spies. There we
go.
I like it. I like it. All right, gentlemen, enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks very much. Cheers.
All right, well, that music tells me it's time to go, and so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at thespeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to Matt Northam for joining us this week. We're back next week, but until then, bye for now.
Enough of this jibber jabber.